It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on the Great Outdoors on WGN Radio. And good morning to a snowy November. If you look outside when it gets light this morning, two things have happened. First of all, the clock has gone back. So for those of you who are listening, it's not actually 5 o'clock. It's actually 4 o'clock. And when it gets light outside, it'll be look like January instead of November. So who knows what November will bring. It's usually in the outdoors, what I call moving month in our part of the world, when birds arrive and animals are frenetic in their attempt to feed, get ready for the winter, and the birds by December have largely departed and the animals have either gone into hibernation or gone to hide in the woods. But this year appears to be a little bit different. We will find out. It is, after all, the first Sunday in November, and it looks a lot, as I said a moment ago, like the middle of January. I have had a remarkable 5 days in the outdoors that I thought I would pass on this morning, which to me is indicative of really how birds live and also just how incredibly thrilling it is to be able to be out with nature when winter arrives in two places, or actually the day before winter arrives in one and the day winter arrived in another. So just last week in 5 days, on Friday morning, I was up at the Delta Marsh, which is west of Winnipeg, Manitoba, on a meeting with experts in the field of canvasback research, trying to figure out why the canvasback population over all these years does not seem to be able to increase, despite enormous efforts to increase the canvasback population. Their numbers just seem very steady. And we had all the leading experts really in the continent there. Mike Anderson, who's long time with Delta Waterfowl Foundation and Ducks Unlimited. He's actually now a director, I think, emeritus of Ducks Unlimited Scientific Program. Frank Rauer, who's the president of Delta Waterfowl. The two of them know more about canvasbacks than anyone alive on the face of the earth, and to have 3 hours of discussions as to what's going on, why can their numbers not increase despite efforts on habitat, despite efforts on trapping to reduce predation, despite long restrictive hunting regulations and all those factors, and yet they don't seem to move the needle. So we went out of the meeting ended on Thursday night, and Friday morning, we went out to a marsh east of where we were staying on the 50,000-acre Delta Marsh. And last year, a few years ago, you may recall, I described the canvasback migration of all time, at least for me, on the Delta Marsh. This time, I'm going to describe one of the most incredible experiences I'll ever see on a marsh with mallards. I paddled with Art Mermain, who is chairman of the Waterfowl Research Foundation, and who, as much as I do and as any of us do, loves the marsh. And we had about a 45-minute canoe paddle. And in today's world of motors and noise, there are no motors in the Delta Marsh. The only noise you hear is that of the canoe paddle slipping into the water as you glide across the shallow reed beds and head to big open bays and little cuts. And about 40 minutes after we paddled, we arrived at this big bay, which had had a report of having several thousand mallards on it, staging for the migration to head south. And when we arrived, it was just getting light. You could see that there was a little bit of cloud in the east, otherwise high stars above. The north wind coming out of the off of Lake Manitoba, roaring in the trees just to our north. And we could see in the dim light really a large number of mallards trading back and forth over about a half a mile away from where we were at the end of this bay. So we paddled over there, and we figured out how we would set up. And for the next 3 hours, we just basically sat and watched an air show that really doesn't happen, but it happened for us. And it reminded me of the canvasback air show 2 years ago. And this turned out to be the last flight for Manitoba. The next day, the marsh was harder than a rock. The temperature had fallen, which you've all seen across much of the country. Temperature began coming down from the North Pole, and boy, it got cold, and the wind rose. The next day, it was blowing out of the north at a solid 20-25 miles an hour. And the march was turning hard before our eyes the next day. But on this day, the mallards were coming back from stubble, and they were moving around the marsh, and virtually everyone wanted to come exactly where we were sitting. And as the sun came up and the clouds moved away, we had bright sunshine, and we would sit there and we would wait for the perfect shot on a drake and take the drake and then let the next 100 or 150 mallards pass. And we did this for 3 hours until we put our guns away and just sat there and watched on the edges of canoes. We were within 300 yards of where the Duke of York in 1901 came and stayed in the famous visit he made to North America and to the Delta Marsh. And to sit there literally 300 yards away from where the old chimney is from the primitive cabin he stayed in and watch a display of birds feeding and coming back for water and gathering for what that night would be their grand departure. The next morning, as I mentioned, Art Romaine and I went out into the marsh. I don't think we saw 5 ducks in an hour. It was over. But on that Friday morning in October, the 25th of October, we were there when the great last staging flight in the Delta Marsh in Canada took place. The birds were in full plumage, in great condition, and to watch them whirl over the marsh and to know that, well, actually we didn't know, that the next day they would all be gone, headed to Point South, and maybe you've seen them in Minnesota or Illinois, or you haven't seen them yet in Arkansas, but because the season's not open, but you may be out looking and they're there. These birds by the thousands, picked up, packed up, and headed south for the winter. So that was Friday. Tuesday morning, I found myself with Kerry Lupt, who's one of the great conservation leaders in America when it comes to economic efficiency and trying to figure out how we can do things better. I found myself in the Great Salt Lake Basin just 4 days later. The wind was out of the north, 20 miles an hour. Temperatures were headed for record cold levels. And we headed out to a marsh breaking ice as we went. Now think about this. We're breaking ice in October, the 30th of October, and we are breaking ice. It is 40 degrees below normal in Salt Lake City. And the same thing happened, only this time the birds were arriving. We watched thousands and thousands and thousands of pintail coming from the north and mallards. And in the gathering wind and snow squalls, these birds had maybe left Canada the night before or the day before, or maybe left the high line of Montana, some of them even having come as far away as Manitoba and Saskatchewan. And they were arriving. So on Friday, I sat in one of the most historic marshes in all the world, and we watched the mallard stage and leave. On Tuesday morning, I was in one of the most historic marshes in all the world, the Great Salt Lake, in a violent storm, and we watched the birds arrive. In 5 days, to see birds leave one area and arrive in another is something that in all the years I've been doing this, I've never seen before. And the swans by the thousands, and actually the tens of thousands, arrived. And when I come back from a break in a moment, I'm going to tell you about what happens when things then freeze in the Great Salt Lake and you have several hundred thousand birds sitting on the ice. It'll make us think a little bit about our plumbing system. But it was in all the years I've traveled north to south and east to west following birds, I will say it's the first time I've seen the Grand Passage leave an area and just a few days later arrive in another area and been there both times. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power? better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix Lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN. And don't forget, the clocks went back this morning. You need to look at your watch and set it back or put the kitchen clock back. You lost an hour of sleep. Just to finish where I left off before we went to the break, on two epic days, which to me are all about why fall is so spectacular. Whether you're fishing for muskie up in the North Woods and the fish are building all their energy for the winter and they're striking anything, or whether you are, as I was, sitting in two epic marshes, the Delta Marsh in Manitoba, the Great Salt Lake Basin in Utah, the day the ducks left one and arrived in the latter, it makes you realize how vibrant nature is. So that was Tuesday morning, as I described before the break, when the wind was up and the birds arrived. Wednesday morning, it was ice, frozen solid. And on that ice were tens of thousands of swans and tens of thousands of waterfowl and thousands of cranes. And you looked across the ice and you realized that birds don't have the plumbing system that we put into place. And it made me think, and the individuals I was with think about, the impact of millions of migratory birds when they arrive in places and stage, and the amount of fertilizer that they place in the ecosystem. And this has been going on since the beginning of time. And so we as humans obviously are the only entity that ever treat waste. But there's something ecologically important that we may not understand. I'm not advocating for human waste. Please understand that. But that we may not understand about massive concentrations of birds and what they do to the ecosystem in a place like the Great Salt Lake Basin when they are there for several weeks and they deposit material for several weeks. And it happens in California. It happens in all the great staging marshes. But it struck me because it was so evident on the ice. You don't see it when birds are in the water. But when they're on the ice, and they can only be on the ice, you see it as far as the eye can see. And it did strike me that maybe biologically, the interface between massive movements of birds and an ecosystem that is reliant upon their fertilizer is in fact very, very important to the health of these ecosystems. So that was 5 days in the north wind and the cold. And when I left the Great Salt Lake Basin a couple of days ago, they were in record temperature colds, welcoming November as we did in Chicago. Probably we'll be talking to you on the 1st of December and we'll be back in our shirt sleeves, but it certainly has been a wild week in the outdoors. Shifting from that to what's going on in Indonesia, I just had to take a moment to talk about a headline that came up this week, and that is that the capital of Indonesia is being moved from Jakarta to Borneo. And it's being moved because Jakarta is sinking. And Jakarta is sinking because they have taken so much water out of the ecosystem, out of the aquifers underneath Jakarta, that it's literally just collapsing. So they're moving the capital to Borneo. I'm sure you'll hear people saying that climate change has caused the capital to move. This article actually said that no, the capital is being moved because of the damage being done by humans to sucking all the water out of the aquifer. And if we think about that for a moment, Jakarta is not the only place in the world where far too many people live and are taking the water out of their aquifers. Jakarta just happens to be in an area where the ocean makes a big difference. But there are other areas, lots of other areas where humanity has gathered, where we are draining our underground aquifers. And it may not be that they sink into oblivion, but rather that we simply dry up our underground rivers. And it is one of the crises that the world is going to face. And we sit here in 2019, and if we're talking still in 2030 or 2040 to each other, which I hope we are, on WGN Radio, we will have found other places in the world where people have had to move because of the ecological damage that we did to our aquifers. And that is not a far stretch to say that there are going to be areas of the upper Midwest and the Great Plains and Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska and Texas where people are going to have to move because they no longer have underground aquifers to sustain their life. We are draining our aquifers at an alarming rate. And you look what's happening, if one looks what's happening right now in Wyoming and in Colorado and Idaho and California over water, that water that's coming out of the ground is coming often hundreds of miles away, maybe thousands of miles away. We really don't know. And we stick that straw in the ground in the form of a well, whether it be an agricultural well or cities, and we suck that water out. Jakarta is an example of what can happen. When we suck too much out, things actually sink. And I, for one, spend a lot of time thinking about this because of the work I'm in. And I mentioned I was with Carrie Luft a moment ago, who runs the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership. And that entity thinks a lot about this and what's happening with our underground rivers, our underground aquifers. We are at risk without knowing it because it's not seen of putting too many straws in the ground and taking out too much water and drying up our underground rivers. And when we do, we may not sink. Des Moines might not sink. It might just run out of water. Minneapolis, lots of water around it. But what about Fargo? What about Denver? What about these other places? They may not going to sink. They're on bedrock, unlike Jakarta. But the veins of water, which are no different than the veins of oil in the Middle East and in Louisiana and Texas, when those rivers dry up, they're not going to be replenished. So aquifer recharge is one of the most important things that we need to look at from a holistic perspective of how we are going to protect our ecosystems. And in the coming year, you're going to hear a great deal from me, and I think others, as to what's going on in the prairies of North America with water and how water is being moved off the land and not being allowed to recharge aquifers, which go back to the glacial age. There'll be a movie a little bit over a year from now called Wings Over Water, which I'm involved with, which is going to tell the story, an IMAX movie, which is going to tell the story of the prairies and of water and of birds. And hopefully it will awaken a continent as to what we are doing with our water. So if you're listening this morning and you look outside and you feel that smell and you go, I don't want to see any more water. And in fact, if we get just a little bit more precipitation in Chicago this year, it will be the wettest year ever. And throughout much of Illinois, it's going to be the wettest year ever if we get a little more precipitation. And I'm sure between now, this being November 3rd and December 30th, we're going to get some more precipitation. So basically, we are living in the wettest year in history since we settled this land, and we're probably saying, we have plenty of water. Well, we don't see what's going on underground. We don't see what's going on in the Dakotas and southern Manitoba and Saskatchewan. Much more to come on that. Thanks for being with me, and I hope the next week in the great outdoors is as wonderful for you as the past week was for the grand migration of birds. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voices of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.